Well, Tom, we're back. This is it, the start of a new season. F1 Nation returns. The return of F1 Nation.
Yay! I'm so excited about it, Damon. And I've just got off the plane from the Bahrain test, and I think it's going to be a cracker. I think 2023 is going to be a cracker. And we're going to get some unusual names, I think, up there as well. Hey, how much would you give me, Damon, on Fernando Alonso winning a race in 2023?
Do you know, I wouldn't give you that much, to be honest. It looks like a distinct possibility. I mean, I would never count him out in anything, but that car looks quite good. There's been a bit of change, a bit of a shuffling in the order by looking at the testing, but we're going to get into that in a minute, aren't we?
We are. Now, look, this is our season preview, but for new listeners, F1 Nation is a show where every week during the season, we'll either give you a race preview or a review, or if there's no race, like during the April break, we'll just be talking about the here and now in Formula One. We're going to be talking to drivers, to team bosses, F1 experts from all over the world. And Damon, do you know what? We've been busy over the winter, haven't we? We've been like football team managers, looking around for new signings, people who we think can boost the show, give us, you know, that little bit more up front, get a few more goals. And we've got a new signing, haven't we, Damon?
It's brilliant, isn't it? We've got a goal scorer. We've got a top goal scorer in the team who's right in the hot seat right now. He seems to have landed with his slight Spanish connection. He seems to have landed himself in a very interesting place.
Well, he has. But before we get on to what he's doing now, I just want to give him a bit of build up. He's raced in more than 100 Grand Prix. His first season was your last back in 1999, Damon. He's tested relentlessly for McLaren and Ferrari. And this season, he's going to be working with Aston Martin. And he's joining F1 Nation, Pedro de la Rosa. A very warm welcome to the show.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Damon. Very happy to be here. Very happy to be with Fast Damon.
Pedro, some of the people listening to this show might not remember. The last time we interviewed you, you were talking about you being a doppelganger for me. And I think if anyone can see the screen that we're talking to each other, they would probably change their minds because your hair is jet black and look, you look extremely a very elegant Spanish look to you. And I look like I've got very white hair. So I look like Gandalf or something. But anyway, it's great to have you on the show. You are going to spill the beans, mate. You are inside a Formula One team. You're going to spill the beans to us as much as you can without losing your job. As to what's going on inside very interesting arrangement with Fernando Alonso moving to Aston Martin. And dramatic events as well, of course, because Lance Stroll has incapacitated himself with his pre-season activities, recreational activities on a bike, I believe. But so it's been a bit of a bumpy start, but the car looks good.
Yes, well, it's a really interesting season ahead of us, and especially when you are inside a team. I mean, your knowledge and your level of understanding of passion just multiplies. So I'm extremely happy to be at Aston Martin this year, and especially because there's so many things happening in-house, and there is a lot of expectation, but the expectation is built around things that are happening in Silverstone, around the factory, in the wind tunnel, where a lot of talent joining the existing talent. I mean, the situation, the atmosphere in the team is brilliant. So I'm just happy to have arrived at the right time, to be honest.
Now, look, while we're talking Aston Martin then, I thought, Pedro, at the test, now, this is going to sound ambitious, but I thought you were the third fastest team. Would you agree?
Wow, that is a big, it's a big big statement, really, to say third biggest or the third fastest. I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of... it's going to be difficult to say until we get to the qualifying, because it is difficult to judge by a single lap time. But then again, if you look at the race simulations done by everyone, which is where we have to focus really to get any performance evaluation of every team, we were really fast. I mean, on the last long run race simulation that Fernando did on the last day, third day at nighttime, which is basically when the race will happen. He was impressive. His degradation was minimal. And that was really, he was possibly not the fastest, but he was possibly one of the guys that managed to have less degradation. So it was impressive. Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, we have to aim high as well, you know? I mean, we cannot keep playing the card that we are going to be beaten by every team. No, I mean, we are ambitious. We want to feel the work that everyone has been doing in the factory is relevant, is important. And why not? Yeah, third team, fourth team, maybe. Let's see.
Pedro, we'll come back to Fernando Alonso in just a minute, because our little F1 Nation family is now complete, because someone has just joined us. Natalie Pinkham is back for more. Nats, how are you?
I'm really well. Much better for seeing you and sitting alongside Damon in the studio. Hello.
Hello.
Delighted to be here. How is everyone?
We're great. And can you see our new signing for the year, Natalie?
Oh, I can see him very clearly. Yeah. And I can hear him. And actually, Pedro and I did have a little get together at Silverstone. When was it, Pedro? A couple of weeks ago?
Well, it was just the night before the Mercedes launch, because you were presenting. You know, we talked about all the secrets from the Mercedes car design, the aerodynamics that you were aware of, all the, you know, which was very useful to share. And it really helped us in the test in Bahrain.
It was also Valentine's Day.
Yes. Ah, we got to the bottom of that. Okay.
Yeah, I was having dinner with my Valentine's date, Naomi Schiff, and we gate crashed Pedro and Fernando's dinner. They were having a romantic meal for two as well.
It was, Tom, it's unbelievable. After all these years, I end up the night of St. Valentine's having dinner with Fernando, a candle, and then we suddenly get Natalie in the equation. You know, it was great, because it was getting a bit out of hand, you know, this dinner with Fernando alone in Silverstone on St. Valentine's. So it was great to have Nat, and we really had a lot of fun. There were some anecdotes as well during the night, but that's something between us.
We should explain that Sky, obviously, are ramping up, and this is their big day for talking to the press and getting some filming. We've got a show this evening, so we're in the studios at Sky Studios all day. Won't see the light from the sun at all, if there is any sun.
No, but we're tanning off the lights in the studio. These are so bright.
Yeah, they're really bright. But so we're all, the whole gang at Sky has all been, it's going to be flat out all day and doing predictions of the season. So this is great, because we're doing this show first.
Yeah, so basically what we're going to do is plagiarise everything that Pedro says and pass it off as our own and basically make ourselves look intelligent.
I've got a new name for Pedro. I think we're going to call him the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh,
because we're going to be putting him on the rack and prizing information out of him.
Well, I think he knows a lot more than he's letting on, because he played it down when I saw him at Silverstone. Oh no, I'm not sure Aston Martin. And then look what happens in the test. Brilliant.
You know how it works. You know, I mean, we have to play it down in a way when we are confident. But in any case, I think it was a very interesting test we went through. I mean, for all the teams in a known scenario, with all the data that was available from the previous season, with you know, with the porpoising and all the issues that all the teams had, you know. So I think that we, as a team, we learn a lot. But I'm sure every team learn a lot with the new regs and the new tweaks in the floor height. So we'll see. I mean, it's always the same in winter testing. You go there 3 days, you do long runs, you do short runs, you do you try five different compounds, and what do you know? You know nothing about the competitors. You can only say where you are, really, in respect with last season. That's it.
Pedro, just for the benefit of the listeners, what's your role in the team? What's your kind of some sort of brand ambassador as well as kind of communications person, or you are you actively involved? Will we see you on the pit wall?
I will. Yeah, I mean, my official role is obviously I'm not in the pit wall for sure. I mean, I am the team ambassador, which means basically I will assist the team in all the communication, marketing, PR events. I mean, try to help the drivers in those events, that unload them a bit of work. So basically, it's a bit like acting as when I was a reserve driver, doing the same, but without actually driving the car or jumping in the simulator. That's my role. So I mean, that's for sure. I have no involvement whatsoever in the development of the car. But being a team ambassador, I mean, the point really is that I need to know what's going behind the scenes, you know, on the team, how the team is working, who is who, what are we testing? I mean, because at the end of the day, the people will ask me and I need to be involved. So that's the main reason why I was at the test of in Bahrain.
Pedro, be completely honest. When news came through of Lance's unfortunate accident, did you harbour even the smallest, slightest hope that you could jump in the car? Because I would have loved to have seen that.
No, but it is true that I mean, obviously, once we made the digestion of that terrible news, I joke with Mike Crack, you know, that, look, Mike, if for any reason Felipe is feeling unwell tomorrow, or if we have any issue with Stoffel, I mean, if the worst came to the worst, I'm there, you know. So if we need to do a proper, filming day or the whatever, what type of test, or even if you want to do some race simulations or whatever, I can jump into the car. But then obviously he thought it was not a very funny joke, so I changed my approach since but why not? You know, I honestly think that if at one point they would need me, I mean, not for performance runs, but for aero testing or whatever, I mean, of course I would be more than capable. But we have plenty of reserve drivers in the team, so that's not an issue.
Pedro, you've known Fernando for a long time. What is he now, 41? Do you still see that same ferocious competitiveness, desire in the man?
Tom, I can see that even more than in the past. You know, I think that Fernando is... He's a competitive person. He's a competitive animal. He enjoys to compete. You know, it's his life. The good thing about Fernando is that he's a more complete driver, in the sense that he's now realized that to win, you also need to be a motivator. You need to be able to translate that level of hunger, that level of willingness of winning willingness, to the whole organization, to those more than 700 people that are pushing for you to win, you know? So I think that is what I'm learning from Fernando in this new chapter, in this new stage of his career, is the fact that he's still the first full competitor that I met back in McLaren in 2007. But now with a much bigger sense, or a better understanding of what he needs to do in the organization to make the team more competitive. And this is really beautiful to see. Every time we have a debrief, every time he speaks on the radio, we are all listening. And you know, there's always this positive last message of pushing, of making sure that we do everything to be better prepared the next day, you know. And this is something that I hadn't seen from Fernando, or that badly, in the past. I think he's learned a lot, and he's pushing all of us in all our areas to an extent that was unseen before. Damon, I'm sure that you were, when you became world champion, you could sense that your input in the team was, it's not about understeer and oversteer, it's much more complex, it's much more powerful, I would say.
No, there's a whole different aspect to being the lead driver in a team, and it's something that I probably didn't appreciate, because when I came into Formula One, I was very much sort of behind Alan Prost, or behind Ayrton Senna, you know, as the kind of support role. And then when you get thrown into a championship leading role, you've got this extra responsibility. And I think the great drivers are people like Lewis Hamilton, who inspire the team around them. And they learn this skill. And Michael Schumacher did the same. And you can go back to, you know, Niki Lauda and people like that. They know that they have a dynamic effect on those around them, and their mood affects everybody else. So I've seen this in Fernando. I saw him when he was at Alpine. He seemed to be taking the load, and the team could see they were kind of pleased that someone was accepting that responsibility. It's a big job, he's definitely up to it. But you can equally completely destroy everything if you say the wrong thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And without wishing to digress as well, I think it's fascinating to see the transition that drivers make when the realization sets in that is their role. And I'm thinking of someone like Lando Norris. Now that Daniel's left the team, Oscar Piastri's come in, and Lando, even though he's very young, is a team leader now, and he's got that weight of responsibility. I'm sure he'll step up and boss it, but it's the evolution of a driver, isn't it?
Nat, the beauty about Fernando is that he has inherited that role, but he doesn't realize. It's like a natural evolution of his character, of his sportsmanship, and he's very comfortable in it. You know, there's not any added responsibility in his attitude, or he's just happy, he's just relaxed, and that's why his message is so powerful inside the organization. It's because it's not fake, it's real, it's strong. You know, it's commitment, it's a focus, and this is brilliant, because everyone in the team is like saying, wow. You know, we have to give him a bit more. We have to give a bit more in the team.
Does he understand his role alongside the boss's son? Is the dynamic between him and Lance going to be different to anything he's had before in his career?
I think that Fernando is very clever, and he understands that he has to push the team. And if he pushes the team in the right direction, he will push Lance, he will push everyone. You know, so I think his attitude is... is like he's not fighting against his teammate. He wants the car to go fast, because if the car, he said to me the other day, if the car is fast, we will achieve good results. I don't care if it's my teammate or it's me. We will, and one race it will be Lance. The next race it will be me. But I don't really care. I'm not going to fight with Lance for the, you know, I don't, he said, I don't want to waste time with Lance in a race. I don't want Lance to waste time with me in a race. We are a team. And I've known him for a long time. I think that he has changed. His approach has changed, but it's not because it's Lance or it's anyone in the team. It's because he's 41. He's 41 and he has no time to waste. He needs to win. And if the team wins, he wins. And it's this confidence, self-confidence of, if the team manages to produce a fast car, we will win, I will win. It's not like other teammates that they say, well, I'm not sure if I will be as fast as my teammate. Fernando has never had any doubt that if the car is can win, he will be one of them winning. You know, he might share wins with his teammate, but he will. It's the difference between some drivers that are fighting against their teammate on a daily basis, because they have doubts, inner doubts of, they can I win? Fernando, when you speak with him, his only obsession is that the car has to be fast enough to win.
I love the hashtag that's going on social media at the minute. You remember when he was at Alpine, it was El Plan. El Plan was to get Alpine back to the front. Whereas now it's Mission 33, isn't it? The mission is to get his 33rd Grand Prix win. Mission 33.
Yes. Man, I mean, this 33 thing, it's incredible. I mean, in Spain, the situation now is out of hands, you know. Even the other day, it was my birthday, so I was 52 during the Bahrain
test. Congratulations.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. And not a grey hair on your head.
You could easily pass as 50.
Yes. Yeah, but you know the joke. I was going to, in social media, I was going to post, today is my birthday, I'm 33 plus 19, you know? But I thought to myself, we have to keep the expectations low. I mean, don't start with this Mission 33, because it's just getting out of hand. And at the end of the day, we don't know if he will win the 33rd Grand Prix or not. You know, I mean, this is something we have one season in front to discover. But this 33 thing is great to feel the excitement that is generating across the world.
Obviously, that's going to be a big story. Fernando and Aston Martin is going to be a great story, and it looks very promising. So we like that, because any team that kind of gets us in the mix of the top three makes it more interesting. So you guys were at the test. What, looking around, the vibe seems to be Red Bull are comfortable, Ferrari look promising but a little bit erratic, and Mercedes seem to be back where they started last year, not as bad but a little bit better.
Let's start by talking about Red Bull Racing. I caught up with Jack Ploy, who's an F1 broadcaster with Ziggo in the Netherlands. He says Max is totally focused on winning a third straight title.
Always. He wants to win every race, everywhere.
And do you see, is the hunger as great now as it was when he first came in?
I saw him coming out of that car, and he never had such a real good first test day, did he? Ever. Because every year he was beaming after day one. When he came out of the car, he was a little bit grumpy. We have a lot of work to do. But now he came out of that car here in Bahrain on the first test day. He was smiling from ear to ear. He was so happy.
I think the general feeling after the Bahrain test is that Red Bull are once again going to be the team to beat.
Absolutely.
And if they're the team to beat, is Max the driver to beat? Or do you think Checo will put up a proper fight?
No. Sorry for Checo. I would love to see him up front, but Max is going to beat him and the rest.
Yeah. And do you think having Daniel Ricciardo as the team's third driver will be a little unsettling for Checo?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think that will do anything to him. He has to be quiet and silent and do his own thing and make sure that he gets the best out of himself in the car. And then he can win.
Yeah.
But that's a very tricky thing.
Now, two Dutch drivers on the grid. It must be fever pitch in the Netherlands
now. Wow. It's good for the sports. Excellent. And of course, Nick, he deserves it. Maybe he deserved it a little bit more earlier, but he couldn't make it. But he did a great move last year. Excellent.
What can Nick achieve? I mean, he's a rookie, but he's 28 years old. Do you think that'll help him having a few extra years?
Absolutely. What he can reach is the maximum the car can give him. I'm absolutely sure that he can get the maximum out of the car. So what he should do, as everybody does, beat your teammate. That's the first thing you have to do. And a little bit lucky.
And do you think he can beat Yuki Tsunoda?
Yeah, I think he can. Absolutely. Yeah. On his experience.
Okay. Well, look, what about the main man, Max Verstappen? He's going for three in a row.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just give us an idea about the popularity of Formula One in Holland. The Max Dutch Grand Prix is a sellout.
Immediately. But the good thing is that now a lot of people say, huh, two drivers? Are we that good as a country? And that is good for motorsports in Holland in general, because everybody thinks, oh, well, we have a talented country. Oh, we have a lot of people who can. So for go-karting, for the support races, everything is very well now in Holland. Everybody's, whoa, racing, motor racing, thanks to Max.
Okay, so Max Verstappen, four world champion in 2023. That's your vibe?
I think so, yeah. That's my vibe, yeah. He looks very strong. He's very eager. It's not from another world championship. No. But first things first, you know him? Bahrain, coming up Grand Prix, win that one. And then he wins the next one and the next one, and then you become a world champion. That's how he thinks.
I think what that says to me, we were talking with Pedro about the importance of the driver and inspiring the team. I mean, the guy, Max, he's there to win. He's completely solid. The team have complete faith in him. They know they built it all around him. He gets in the car, he delivers straight off, and he gets out. And the mood that he will give the team, to me, Max, when he got out of the car, every time I looked at him, there wasn't a frown, there wasn't a kind of like sulk on. He just goes, yeah, that's good, I'm ready. You know, let's go. Let's fix it from last year, where they looked strong and they didn't win the first race.
Well, that's the I was going to ask you, ex-drivers, that question. How important is it to win the first race? It was a double DNF for Red Bull in Bahrain last year, and they went on to dominate the season. So sometimes winning when you first go out at the beginning of the season can lull you into a false sense of security, and you can think you're onto something special when you're not.
It's not that important to win the first race if you have such a dominant car as they're having at the moment, you know. So I would say that it's always important to start on the right foot, yes, but you know, he's done it before. He's last year they had a dreadful start and they won comfortably the championship. So I don't think that Max is in that state of mind where he desperately needs to win every race, or, you know, on the first race especially.
We're talking about Red Bull, but what about Checo? You know, he put the fastest time up, didn't he? So
he's saying in rather ominous terms for his opposition that they're going to start 2023 much stronger than last year.
Yeah, but that fastest time Damon has just referenced was on the fastest of the tyres, the C5, whereas the quickest tyre we're going to have this coming weekend is the C3. And interestingly, Max just stuck with the C3. He just dealt with what he's got. He used what he's got to deal with this coming weekend. let's not forget that the tyre compounds are new this year, and it's a much stronger front tyre than we had last year, which might, tell me racing drivers if I'm wrong, but might induce a little bit more oversteer, which to me lends itself even more to Max Verstappen. I could see him being even more dominant over Checo than he was last year.
It's a good point, Tom.
Yeah, Checo, I mean, not that it makes a difference, Tom, but it was on the C4. I mean, I don't want to, you know, destroy your F1 nation on my first appearance, but it was on the C4, not C5, which doesn't make a big difference at all. But in any case, you're right. I mean, the front end is a bit different from this with this new range of tires. However, the lap times, if you compare the lap times from this season, I mean, pre-season test in Bahrain to last year, they are incredibly, so much faster. It is all the teams are quicker, you know, it's just astonishing.
You know, I know that everyone's thinking it's Max in a Red Bull and Sergio that is there to kind of back everyone up. But Sergio won't be thinking that. As any racing driver worth his salt, Sergio will be going in thinking, I've got to beat Max Verstappen. You mustn't forget that. You know, and he will be trying everything. So it will be interesting to see him grapple with, either he's going to have to grapple with reality, which is that no one can beat Max, you know, apart from a very select few, or he's going to acknowledge that he's going to play a supporting role and hopefully get a 1-2 in the championship, which they failed to do last year. But he seems happy enough there. But he's got Daniel Ricciardo in the background as well, don't forget.
I had a very brief catch-up with Helmut Marko at the test, and he was talking as if he just won the world championship. I've never known him be so confident. The car is an evolution of last year's RB18, but, you know, it's lighter. I think it was too heavy last year. I think they've now got it on the weight limit of 798 kilos. They got the CFG where they want it. I see Red Bull being utterly ruthless and utterly dominant, certainly in the early part of the season.
With regards to the reduced wind tunnel time, I know Christian said that they need to be selective and efficient in what they put in the wind tunnel. Is that going to have any impact at all?
Well, that's a very good question. It doesn't look like that at the moment. You know, I mean, everyone was expecting Red Bull to have some difficulties in the beginning, you know, at least because they obviously have less time than others. But it was really incredible how fast they were, how consistently fast they were in the long runs, how little deck they had, especially because also Checo did the long runs in the morning, where the track temperature were exceeding 40 degrees, which makes a massive difference on deck. So, I mean, it's the fact that they were doing the long runs when the track was at its worst that is worrying, you know. And then Checo at the end of the last day, you know, he did some performance runs, which I'm pretty sure he never used low fuel. I mean, he was far from using low fuel, but just with the C4, the softer compound, one of the softest compounds. So it just proves that they were trying not only to hide with fuel, but also trying to do the long runs with very high track temperatures to learn more and also hide their true pace, you know, or their true deck. It was really impressive to see the Red Bull during this Bahrain test.
Well, let's talk about Ferrari now, guys. Second in both championships last year. The target this year has to be winning. Simple as that. Let's start by getting the thoughts of Sky Italy's Roberto Quinquero, who says that Ferrari's new boss, Fred Vasseur, has a big job on his hands.
What the people believes is that Fred is a pure racer. And it's a long time that Maranello was calling a racer at the top of the team. And he is. Now we'll see, because Maranello is a very strange place. It's not like other teams. You have a lot of pressure. You have one CEO. You have one president. You have the Tifosi. And you have a lot of media. And you have to consider a lot of pressures.
Well, does Fred have a good car? What about this year's SF23?
I think it's the logical evolution of the last year car. I think Ferrari didn't need a revolution car. I think they just need an evolution, because last year, of course, the second part of the season was not very good in terms of tire management, reliability. But that are, I think, topics that you can fix, the problem that you can try to fix with an evolution. So I'm expecting a good car. Of course, The pre-season test confirmed that Red Bull is very strong. But it's possible to say now how big room of evolution has this project. Last year, the upgrade program was not as the same level of Red Bull. I hope this year it is, because I'm a big fan of sports. My dream is to see 2-3 teams fighting for the championship in Abu Dhabi, and that win the best.
Right man for the job, Fred Vasseur?
Well, I think so, because I like his relationship with Charles Leclerc. I think that dynamic could make a significant difference. I'm interested that, again, as with the other cars, it is an evolution rather than a revolution. They've stuck to the same overall philosophy as they had last year. And let's be frank, it was a quick car. Reliability and strategy let them down, but the car itself could deliver results. And it was the other elements that need pulling together, which I feel can be done by a great leader. Let's see if Fred's the one for that.
Yeah, I mean, Fred is a racer. He's won every category. I mean, he's definitely going to be a great team principal. There's no question about that. Mattia Binotto was really good for Ferrari in the sense that he was the one of the first team principals that actually could think long-term inside, you know, or took the courage, or, you know, he was brave enough to think in the long, mid-long term at Ferrari, where normally at Ferrari, you know, I've been there and every decision is orientated to the next race, next Grand Prix. But Mattia had was brave enough to, during 2021, diminish the development progress of the car and basically concentrate on the change of regulations on the 2022. It's not easy at Ferrari. So I think Mattia did a fantastic job, and we are seeing a very competitive Ferrari, but thanks to his work as well, you know. So let's not forget that.
I agree with you, Pedro, but I think Mattia did a brilliant job, and I think he's been thrown under the bus a bit, frankly. And I think the reason he has gone has been as much to do with his real skill didn't seem to me to be running a Formula One team in terms of the race strategy. You remember the conversation on the podium with Charles Leclerc and stuff, you know, about the managing of the drivers and all that pit wall stuff. Really, it's where Fred Vasseur is really good, I think. He's good at looking at a race team. And I think that, you know, Mattia Binotto, they've lost the real talent there. Back at the factory, I think he could have been very effective. I don't know what went on in there to think that they could cope without him. But I think that they could have split the roles. I think they could have had, you know, Fred in there as running Ferrari's operations at the racetrack and kept Mattia in there as a team principal.
Fred's come in and made changes immediately. He's promoted a new strategist on the pit wall, an Englishman called Ravin Jain. I mean, he worked on strategy last year, but he's now chief strategist. So, you know, who can remember Monaco and races like that when Charles was on the wrong tyres? There are going to be changes. I love Fred. I think he's a brilliant racing manager. But I mean, I'm only echoing what you guys have already said. And I think Ferrari will go well. I think that they've got more power. They found the reliability again, so they're able to turn up the engine a little bit more. They've got greater straight line speed. I think we saw that in the Bahrain test. How that will affect tyre wear, I don't know. We're going to find out very shortly. But I see Ferrari just sort of knocking around the P2 in the Constructors' Championship. And occasionally, when Red Bull slip up, I could see Ferrari winning a race. But I think that's all it's going to be at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult to really know. I mean, also Bahrain is not the easiest track to get conclusions about. You know, it's a track where you are very rear limited. There's no stress on the front tires whatsoever, like in Jeddah, for example, in the second race. So I think that a car that is fast in Bahrain, it's obviously will be fast in many circuits, but it's not like a winner everywhere else. You know, it's not like a Barcelona where it's a lot more demanding on the aero, on the engine, on the tires, on everything. However, we'll see. And I mean, the people at Ferrari, they were complaining about a lot of degradation. They were worried about degradation. They were very fast at one lap. So they have that extra speed that they have during the first in qualifying. One thing that really was shocking during the test, I'm pretty sure you agree, is the few, so little red flags that we had. you know, considering it was the first test of the season, there were hardly any red flags during 3 days. The reliability was incredibly good. And the only red flag that could be down to an engine failure somehow was the one from the Alfa Romeo, you know, on the last race by Bottas. The rest was just no issue at all. It was we generated a red flag on the first installation lap of the first day just because we had an electronic issue. That's it. It's shocking.
That was 8.5 hours a day of running and only that one red flag. It was extraordinary. I think we should have no testing next year. Just go straight into the first race.
How do you, Pedro and Damon, feel about limited testing?
I am against such. I mean, I'm in favor of controlling testing, so limiting testing, but a pre-season of 3 days, 1.5 per driver. I mean, let's be honest, there is no time for the driver to get used to the or build the muscles of being on top of the game or at the peak of his game by the first race. There's no way that you can. I mean, and Fernando used to say, you know, I mean, there's no sport in the world where you throw a tennis player into Roland Garros with 3 days of clay testing, you know, or practicing. I think we've gone too far. That's my view. And it's also, there's some good points about having such a limit testing is to see how the teams and the drivers are pushing for the last kilometer, you know, just trying to be the first in the morning, just to get the green light at the end of the pit lane, trying to extract a bit more time, making sure that you know, that there's no mistakes, making sure that all the filming day, the 100 kilometers are used to the maximum to make sure that the reliability at the next the test will be good. There's many things to extract of how efficient we're all being as teams, you know. But 3 days, 1.5 days, I mean, let's not forget it's a one car test. It's not enough physically. I mean, I'm talking from a physics point of view alone, you know, for the driver.
Can you imagine what conversations are going on at Mercedes? The black livery is back, and so are their narrow side pods. The team say they've learned their lessons from a difficult 2022, but will this year be any better? Let's get the view from Germany. Michael Schmidt from Auto Motor and Sport. Does he think Mercedes are going to be challenging for the win this week in Bahrain?
I would say not now. They have more troubles than the second place of Hamilton might make you think. This afternoon, they seemed a bit lost because they're trying to recover from yesterday, which was a horrible day. They had balance issues and they couldn't understand why the car was worse than in the first day. So now they were recovering a little bit. But Toto said to me, they are in the moment, both on one lap and on long runs, definitely slower than Red Bull, on one lap also than Ferrari.
Were you surprised that they kept this size zero side pod concept?
Not too much. I think they wanted to make sure that they start the development on a base they know. If they had started, let's say, with a copy of a Red Bull or a Ferrari, I think it would have been much more difficult to find your way back if testing starts with troubles. This base they know. So now I think it's for them easier to find out what is still wrong with it. But I think in a few races' time, we might see a different Mercedes, also in terms of side pods.
The question was always asked right from the start of last year, 2022, when the new reg cars came out. And everyone looked at Mercedes and went, oh, that's a bit different. And then they had loads of problems all season long. And the question was, have they gone the right way? You know, everyone else had gone down a particular direction with regards to what we see on the outside on the top of the car. And we hear this all the time that, oh, it doesn't make that much difference. It's what goes on underneath the car that really matters. But then if it didn't matter, then they you know, they wouldn't spend so much time working about you know, working on these things. But they pursued a similar direction. There is some interesting shapes on the top of the car from behind the driver's head at Mercedes that looks like they put some thought into the way it looks on other cars. The trouble is, is there a problem at Mercedes between what their factory is coming up with, what their interior data and analysis of their aero and everything, and actually what's happening at the track. In other words, some sort of correlation issue, because they seem very confident they've gone the right way. And yet you have to say, well, it's still lacking something. So anyway, they may have fixed it for this year. It'd be great if they have and they get on top of it. And they've, of course, the regulation change of raising the cars by 1.5 centimeters is, you know, very controversial. And Christian Horner and Red Bull are pretty peeved about that, because why should they have to change their cars? But Mercedes managed to, with Toto, managed to push that reg through, which may have
on
helped.
On safety grounds.
On safety ground. And so the battle for the territory, dragging the terrain into your direction where you know your car might be better, that was done last year in the team meetings. And you'd have to say it's a bit of a victory for Mercedes. So they've had that advantage given back to them. And they have to really get it right this year. Otherwise, they're going to have to conclude they've gone the wrong way.
Damon, I mean, one interesting thing is the fact that, you know, we were all surprised when we saw the Mercedes at the launch, because I personally was expecting the Mercedes to go back to a more standard side pod design. But the question really is, no one went to the zero side pod concept, no? I mean,
Williams.
So,
Williams.
Yeah, but I mean, not this season, you know? So
yeah.
All I'm saying is that it's when so many teams go in a different direction, there is normally, you know, there are very clever people around. So in any case, Mercedes will be there no matter what. Also, there was no purposing. No team was complaining about purposing. We saw some purposing on the Ferrari, especially on the second day, or, you know, when they were lowering the ride heights massively on purpose, just to see where the porpoising, on purpose, porpoising, you know. I'm just playing with words, right?
Porpoising on purpose.
But it was incredible for actually, I mean, you know, that the teams were not complaining about porpoising, the drivers had no back pains. It was, I think that what it was trying to be achieved, raising the, you know, 1.5 centimeters, the step in the floor was achieved. There was less porpoising. So, But the question remains, is if we don't have porpoising, then the Mercedes concept should be more competitive, or it isn't. You know, I think that we will find out in a few days.
Pedro, you say Mercedes are going to be there. What do you mean by there? Whereabouts?
Well, I mean, the reality with Mercedes is that they should be... I mean, last year, they already won a race on the second half. They were on pole position in Hungary. I mean, with all the issues, with all the zero side pod zero concept, blah, 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 but they were still pretty competitive. They had less deck in many races than any other. So I think that, I mean, I would never underestimate like a team like Mercedes. Do I like their car? I think it's ugly. That my personal opinion is that it's an ugly car. I mean, it doesn't look fast. So when a car is ugly, it's normally never quick. But it doesn't it is not important what I can think about their aesthetics. I know, and everyone knows in Formula One, what a strong team Mercedes is. And no matter what, they will make it work, you know?
I would counter that, Pedro, with beauty is in the eye of the beholder, because I actually love the look of the car. What do you think, Damon?
Okay, well, I'm still going to risk disagreeing with you, Natalie, because I don't think it's a beautiful car. I think the Ferrari is a beautiful car, and I quite like the Alfa Romeo. I think it looks quite nice. Well, at least that's the colour scheme.
The livery,
But yeah, I think it's nice. But you're right, Pedro. There's something about the back end of it. There's something about this kind of very wasted bit at the back, which looks, I don't know what it is. It's something to do with it reminds me a little bit of the Lamborghini F1 car, which was an absolute catastrophe. I don't know if you remember that far back, but the engineer that used to work on it called it the rubber sausage, basically it twisted so badly. But I'm not going to go too deep into the technical side of it, but it's this difference between that and everyone else's fundamental design, where they've gone for a relatively big-ish side pod to try and sweep the air around and under the top half of the side pod to the diffuser at the back. And you remember, of course, just reminding the listeners that what happened with Aston Martin, Dan Fallows went from Red Bull to Aston Martin, and then halfway through last year they changed their side pods, and everyone was complaining that it was a copy of the Red Bull. Well, yeah, Aston Martin's going quite well, isn't it? And it's gone down that side pod kind of idea, and Mercedes have said, I wonder whether there's a little bit of pride involved, where they go, well, they've gone that way, but we don't want to copy them. And if that is the mindset, then I'm afraid they might be cutting their nose off to spite their face. We'll see.
Well, we asked them that, actually, Naomi and I, at the launch. At what point do you go all the way back to the drawing board and scrap the concept that you've developed? Or, you know, because that would be tempting, surely, just to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
As far as design concepts go, you have to do what's right. You have to do what's fastest. I mean, Toto will be sitting there and going, well, guys, you tell me this is the right way. And we're going to have one more crack at it. And we'll see how things turn out. Yeah, I can be accused of lack of faith in the good guys at Mercedes. And I'm sure they know what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, I think Lewis said something about not wanting to copy. We're not going to copy everyone else or Red Bull. It's not about copying. There comes a point where you have to say, well, this is the direction things are going. And we have to either swallow our pride and say, okay, well, that seems to be someone's come up with a better solution for this new total overhaul of Formula One regulations. And we might have just gone the wrong direction. Then that's going to be a tough one for them to have to swallow if they do decide to change. But if it gets some results, everyone will forget all that.
I mean, the funny thing about this conversation really is that we concentrate on the side pods, how they look, if they are ugly, if they are aggressive. But then you speak with the aerodynamicists or the technical directors from the team, and the last thing they look at is the side pods, you know. They look at the details, at the floor edges, some front wing, you know. But they, you know, it is incredible. They said, I didn't look at the side pod. It's not an important part for us, you know. Or they concentrate on other areas that we don't even see. So let's not get over too technical on this conversation, Damon, because we have no idea. I have no idea about it.
We're not, no. Otherwise, we would be designing racing cars. But it wouldn't be, yeah. Basically, you're right, yeah.
Pinks, what was the vibe at the launch?
It was actually a really positive one. I think that because, as Pedro's alluded to, they finished the season on something of a high, you know, the win in Brazil, 1-2, in fact, in Brazil, it really did feel like their trajectory was a positive one that could be continued into this year because the regs haven't changed. Well, nothing's really changed since last year. So I think it felt like they could carry on as they finished off 22. So it was really positive. I mean, I was interested in testing in as much as day one seemed good, day two not so much, and then day three came good. So again, it's a bit of flip-flopping, isn't it?
Well, doesn't that worry you, though, that maybe the car has a very small operating window? Or I don't know, but it, you know, the Red Bull was just ultra consistent from one day to the next, wasn't it? Whereas, as you say, Mercedes had a bad day too. But what is impressive is the way I think both drivers were ultra positive, even when it wasn't going so well on day two. You know, both Lewis and George were complimenting the team, pushing people forward in the way that we've already discussed with Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin. I feel Lewis does that role brilliantly at Mercedes, but don't know. I find it hard to see them consistently challenging Red Bull, and I think we'll turn up at Baku and they're going to have a slightly revised design on their car. That's my gut feeling. Pedro, can a customer Mercedes team really beat the works team on a regular basis? What difference does it make being a customer?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but the aim is to beat everyone, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if it's a customer team or not, because according to the regulations, you have exactly the same hardware, the same software, the same maps, you know, engine maps as the works team. So what is the difference? I mean, it's not down to the power unit. You know, the power unit should be consistent between your manufacturer or the Mercedes and ourselves. So I think that there is many other areas where the team is concentrating to be better than the rest. I mean, not only Mercedes. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, it has happened in the past. You know, we are accustomed or we are used to having the works team always beating the customers. But with this current Formula One, with how it is structured, I think there is a very good chance of having customer teams beating the manufacturers. We had it in the past between Red Bull with the Renault engine, etc. So let's wait and see. But it's part of the job, you know. Everyone is pushing like 100%, and we'll see if we are able to. But the aim is really to try to improve from last year. Let's not get carried away talking about Mercedes, Red Bull. You know, I think that this is important also from our side to keep the feet in the ground, and not just because we had a good race simulation or a very good race simulation. Let's not forget it was achieved at the end of the last day when the track was really rubbered in, the track was cold, you know. So let's let's keep this momentum. I mean, let's keep our self-belief that we can do it. But let's make sure that we understand that if we don't improve any further, we won't be able to be in the big league.
I mean, I guess the power units are not as big a differentiator as they used to be. And as you say, Pedro, the hardware is the same. So it's more down to, it's more of a chassis battle than a power unit battle. Can we say that?
Yes. I mean, I think we all agree that the biggest differentiator in Formula One are the aerodynamics. But it's also true that nowadays with the ground effect, the porpoising effect, the suspension side of it is also very, very important. But you remember at the end of the V8 era that all the engines were very similar. We had a lot of stability in that area, which was great because we could then concentrate on other aspects. Now I think we are in the end of the hybrid era. So the differences between the power units are minimal. How they exploit the electric or the all the strategies around the lap, how they recharge, how they use the harvest the electric and energy is very, very similar between power units. So that is great because I think that's what Formula One needs, you know, a bit of equality.
Tom, the single caveat to that is that Ferrari seems to have unlocked some of the potential they couldn't with their power unit last year. They were a bit held back and hampered by an issue which I believe they've fixed, which has given them quite a big chunk of horsepower.
We do Alpine.
Les Bleus.
Les Bleus. By the way, can I start by saying, I actually really like their launch. I know that some people were a bit confused by it, but I love the emphasis on female talent. The fact Nicola Adams is going to be an ambassador for them. I mean, if anyone can teach them about fighting spirit, it's her. Zinedine Zidane, I mean, he's like the ultimate French hero. I loved everything about it. And I love the fact that they are passionately patriotic, and they've got two French drivers who, by the way, okay, we haven't had any racing yet, but they seem to be getting on really well. Wait till those visors come down. But I know it was difficult to get a read on them during the test, but I've just got a sneaky feeling that they could do something special this year.
Otmar said that they wanted to get closer to fourth place in the championship, didn't they, or third place in the championship, rather than overhaul that. You know, the ambitions were to break away from the pack.
Right.
Well, Susan, I don't know. They're going to have a problem now, because I definitely think
because of Aston.
Aston's going to, yeah, might turn that one.
Ironic, isn't it? They think, yeah, they're pulling away from McLaren. But they are, but they're not pulling away from Aston.
Of all the teams, they didn't really show much. It was difficult to get a handle on
it
them.
Was,
in the test, wasn't
absolutely.
It? So maybe they're hiding something, or they've got something up their sleeve, but the Renault Panion is good.
They've got an upgrade coming this coming weekend for the race. But let's talk about that all-French lineup and start by getting the thoughts of Fred Ferre, who is the F1 reporter for the French newspaper L'Equipe. He told me at the test how France is feeling about Alpine's all-French driver lineup.
It's ecstatic. Everybody is waiting for that. Maybe because everybody wants to know when it's going to crash between the two of them. Two good guys, but they both want to be the French champion, the number one of France. And now they are in the same team with the same car. So it's obvious that the one who will be in front will be the best.
They've known each other since they were in karting. How would you sum up their relationship?
Very good when they were very young. And then when they started to perform, it's normal. Then you want to beat everyone, and even if it's your friend. So then the battle begins, and you have the father who are involved and want the best for their son, which is normal too. Then the relationship got not bad, but they didn't talk to each other for a long time, especially because they had a different path. Pierre was supported by the French Federation, and he was in karting in a national team, then in single-seater in the national team, helped by Yvan Muller, which is a very famous driver, and then Jean Alesi. And Esteban had to struggle to find his way. And thanks to Eric Boullier and Gravity, he found his way by the Gravity management and Lotus, and then helped by Fred Vasseur in RGP when he won the F3 Euro Series in front of Max Verstappen. Vasseur was the one to give the hand to Esteban and let him meet Toto Wolff. That was the key.
In raw pace, who do you think's quicker?
On Saturday, Pierre. On Sunday, I would say Esteban.
And does the French media have a darling? Does it have a favourite?
I'm not sure. As I love the two of them, I know them for ages, it's difficult to choose between your two sons, I would say. But because Pierre was the first to win a Grand Prix after 24 years of no victory, I would say that Pierre changed the game. And he is more known than Esteban. And because of that, he is maybe the favorite of the French.
In terms of pace, do you think Alpine can join the top three teams this year?
I would say that they are in better shape than last year. But if they are in good shape and they can join Mercedes, let's say, then it's going to be difficult between the two of them. If the car is not performing at all, I'm pretty sure that they are clever enough not to waste their time and their image crashing in each other for fighting for 12 or 10. If they can fight for podium, then they won't let any space for the other, even if it's your teammate and he's French and you know him since he's 4.
What did you make of the car at Team Pedro? Because we did see some minor porpoising. It did also look quite stiff and at times quite difficult to handle.
Well, I went around the track on the last day to, you know, corner by corner, and I really liked how their car looked. It looked very good, very stable, and the fact that they were not worried at all about the lap times. You know, they were really concentrating on the long runs, on the tire deck. I like the way they approach the test, you know, with no necessity of doing a fast lap time to impress anyone. And, you know, so I would take Alpine very seriously this season, to be honest. And as Tom said, you know, they have an upgrade, which is also interesting because I don't think many teams will have an upgrade just in a few days after the test, just before the race. So that looks more encouraging for them. About the nationalities, you know, I mean, I know this program is called F1 Nation, yeah? But I think that talking about nationalities nowadays in Formula One is old-fashioned. We are a global world now. I mean, it doesn't matter the drivers, which nationality they are or where the team is, or because you could be talking about a French team, but it's based in the UK. So what is it, a French team or a UK, you know, a British team? It doesn't really matter. So I think that or Ferrari, for example. Let's put Ferrari as an example. It's an Italian team, but the new generations that are getting involved in Formula One, they love Ferrari. They can love Ferrari, but you ask them if it's an Italian team, and some of them don't even know. It doesn't matter if Ferrari has Italian drivers or not. They love, you know. So I think that talking nationalities is nowadays is old fashioned.
No, Pedro. Ferrari is an Italian team.
Damon, how old are you?
But you're right, it's a global brand. People love just Ferrari in itself. They might not necessarily love it because it's Italian, but if you try and say to an Italian that it's Ferrari's no longer Italian, it's a multinational brand, you might get a bit of a reaction to that.
Will the French media give a honeymoon period to Pierre and Esteban, or will they start playing them off against each other? That's where the pressure's going to come from, isn't it?
Yeah, well, but Tom, I think that the relationship Esteban Pierre, it's not because they are both French. It's just that when they were at karting, the relationship was not good back then. So it is not that, you know, that it's because they are French. It's just because in the past they had their moments in karting. You know, that's where the situation starts. So Then again, you know, it's what I'm talking about is just that it doesn't really matter from my understanding if Pierre is French and Esteban is French. It's irrelevant. It's just how the team manages to get their relationship going and making sure they think about the team and not about themselves.
Pedro, I did a driving thing last year in France, and there were we drove around and went to some fantastic restaurants and hotels, and there were various different cars. And one person turned up in an Alpine. Okay, it was a lovely little blue Alpine, and everywhere you went, all the cars were flashing him. They've got a strong motorsport heritage. Renault are very proud of their history in Formula One. And I know it's called Alpine, but basically it's a Renault. And that is an important dimension. And to have two French drivers, definitely it's a big deal for them. They're definitely coming in as a kind of more Franco-file team. And I don't have a problem with that. I like that idea. Obviously, they lost a great Spanish driver, so we'll see how they get on.
I mean, you know, they're two Brits at Mercedes. It's the deep-rooted competitiveness between Pierre and Esteban, whether they can look beyond that, isn't it? Hang on, what's going on? You two, Damon and Nat, look like you're being pulled in every direction.
Well, Damon's got to go to makeup and he needs at least an hour in there. We have got the Sky F1 preview day, season preview day, and yeah, it's exciting. It's getting us fired up. And we're going to be asked predictions all day today. So should we kick off here now with you? What are your predictions?
Absolutely. It's going to be a great season watching the battles between the big sluggers, you know, the big hitters, Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull. And
So you are putting Mercedes in that mix?
I think we have to put Mercedes in the mix. Down the field, it's going to be great. Such a tight packing. And the cost cap and the regulations now, we're going to see the grid bunch up. So there's going to be many times when people slip up in qualifying. It's going to be down to the competition on the track. So it's going to be a mixed bag through the field. I don't think you can say it's going to be more predictable. It's going to be less predictable, if anything.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be track specific as well. I think we will go race to race. And as Damon says, not be able to call the pecking order. I do think, though, I'm with you that Red Bull have evolved from an already incredibly strong car at the end of 22, potentially an even more dominant one this year.
Well, have fun, you two.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks very much.
Let's move on from Alpine and discuss their main rivals in 2022, McLaren, for whom the pre-season test was far from easy. Let's get the thoughts of F1's Lawrence Barreto.
Oh, it's going to be a tough one. They're behind on the targets that they've set. Their car that they had to start with wasn't at the point in which they wanted it before the start of the season, so they're already down there. I think there is a feeling that they haven't got things like, you know, the wind tunnel up and running yet, and so there's a wait in. They're in transition, if you like, and it's by no means as bad as it was last year when they were having the brake problems that really hurt them throughout the year and really stunted their development. But this isn't a great start for McLaren, and they will know that. And I think if you look around the team, I'm not saying their shoulders are down, but they're definitely not up at the minute. And I feel for them, because you look around and you've got Alpines, you've got Aston Martin, you've got Alfa Romeo and Haas, and they've all got their, you know, feathers up and they're excited about the season. And I think it's as much as McLaren not doing a great job, it's everyone else doing a pretty decent job, and that's going to probably move them ahead of McLaren.
What do you think Lando Norris is making of it all?
I literally just saw him, Thomas. I came over to talk to you, and he's down, if I'm being honest, because I think he's come into this year and I think he knew and he knows the short term is going to be a challenge, but I don't think he was expecting this year to be more challenging than last. And at the moment, as it stands, that's the way it's looking. His focus has got to be obviously just making sure he comfortably beats Oscar, and I think he'll back himself to do that. But like, he's signed this long-term contract with McLaren. He was the only guy who wasn't a Mercedes, Red Bull or Ferrari driver to score a podium last year, so he wants to be kicking on. He came so close to that win, that pole, you know, a few years ago. He wants more. And I think if he goes into this season and he's struggling to get into Q3, I think he's going to find it really challenging.
You say he's going to back himself against Piastri, and all racing drivers have to back themselves, but do you think Piastri's the real deal?
I honestly am not sure. I think if you were to talk to a lot of people, and I have in F2, they rate him so highly. And when Alpine lost him, they were devastated, because they genuinely feel that he is something special. But what have we really got to go on, Tom, in terms of him in Formula One machinery that really will tell us whether or not he can make that step up. Stoffel Vandoorne didn't quite make that big step that everyone thought he would done when he came in, but then equally other drivers like Charles and George have. So it's very, and Lando have. So I think it's tricky. I think Oscar's coming in on a really low basis of mileage. So I think it's going to take him some time. I think the very fact that Andrea Stella's saying we're going to give him some time to settle in shows how difficult this stage is going to be. But by then, Lando could be 50 points ahead, you know, by the time Oscar's. And then it's all about how Oscar deals with that mentally. It's great, I think, that he's got Mark Webber in his corner to help him, because I think that's going to be the most challenging thing this year. It's not allowing him to get mentally beaten. Because if he can kind of get on top of that and really understand that he just needs a year to bed in and what looks like a difficult car to get around, I think that's going to be the most important thing.
That's F1's Lawrence Barreto. And Zak Brown thinks they can still get P4 in the Constructors' Championship this year. What do you think, Pedro?
Well, I mean, the first thing I must say is I also have good friends at McLaren, and I was a bit shocked or surprised by the fact that they were very open about their situation, you know. And normally when you are that open about the car not being quick enough or having missed some development avenues, etc., it means that you're really, really in it, you know. So I think they will struggle for sure, because that's what they are saying, but it's McLaren. They have a great team behind, which I'm sure that they will eventually be fighting for the fourth place in the Constructors. How quick they will manage to recover the time, I don't know, but they were definitely struggling. And also, Tom, if you look at the test, how the test went, there were many days where the two drivers made very different lap times, like 2 seconds between them. And this is because they were following different programs. So you could sense that at some point during the day, they were with lower fuel just to get them up the grid or up the order. And that's normally a bad sign in any team when the two drivers, the gap in lap time between the two is quite big, is that they are trying to explore the car a bit more in the different fuel loads, but especially because they also want to feel how quick they can go or how the car behaves with low fuel, etc. We'll see, but they will struggle at the beginning of the year as they have already told us.
Were you surprised to see them in this situation, given where they ended last year? And let's not forget, had they had two drivers scoring consistently last year, they would have beaten Alpine in the Constructors' Championship. So to suddenly see them struggling, A, for pace, but also there were just some silly things really going on, I thought, at the test, strengthening the winglets and sort of pretty fundamental stuff that you don't often see going wrong in this day and age of Formula One.
Yes, I was surprised, especially because it's McLaren and because it's the second year with this new regulation. So it was a bit surprising that they had suffered so much with a 15 millimeter change in the step, the floor step. So it's surprising because everyone has recovered that points of downforce. It was strange to see them hitting issues that had been not seen before with their car. But anyway, you know, it's early days. Andrea Stella is a fantastic engineer. I think he will become a great team principal, which I really think that he is. I work with him at Ferrari, and I have I really enjoyed working with him. He's such a technical, precise, accurate individual with great values, hard worker. I think he will be one of the surprise of the year, how good of a team principal Andrea Stella will be at McLaren.
And what of Oscar Piastri? You know, F2 champion a couple of years ago, F3 champion prior to that. He had to sit out last year, which was, I guess, a loss of momentum for him. And then there was all the controversy about where he was going to drive. But in 1.5 days testing, is he going to be ready come the first race? Or do you think what we were saying earlier, he just needs longer in the car?
No, I think that Oscar, I mean, of course, that being 1 day, 1 year, you know, not racing is not good for anyone. I've been many years not racing, and it definitely doesn't help. But he has had so much testing with Alpine with the old cars, you know, the historic cars. He has had so much testing also with McLaren. Let's not forget that these guys, you know, we were talking previously with Damon fast, Damon, about the limited testing. But all these teams now have their teams of historic cars. So they are basically jumping or preparing themselves before Bahrain in the old cars, Formula One cars, which gives them the mileage, the knowledge of what is a Formula One. So I think Oscar is an expert on all that, and he's been doing a lot of that with Alpine, but also with McLaren previously. I mean, during the month of February, Oscar was testing, and also November he was testing in Barcelona, you know, with McLaren. So that is great, because we think that he is not experienced enough, or he might need more time. But he's actually had a lot of thousands of kilometers in a Formula One car. It is true that it's not the current car, but he's had 1.5 days exactly the same as any other in the grid. So I think he will be very fast straight away.
And can they rectify their problems and save their season?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's difficult to say. I mean, my work, or our team work, Aston Martin, is make sure that they don't catch us. You know, so let's see. let's hope they can recover the fourth place, but they still cannot make or overtake us, because it will mean that we were further up.
Yeah. And Pedro, do you think that we're going to, that middle order is just going to be even closer this year, and we're going to see Williams joining that mid-grid mayhem?
I think that it's a fantastic year we are looking ahead, because Red Bull looks one step ahead of everyone. But I'm not too sure that this year we will see the three teams and then the rest of the world, you know, like we've seen in the past. I think that at this moment, after Bahrain, with the limited testing we've had, there is like one team that stands out, like Red Bull. But after that, the gaps are very small between a Ferrari, a Mercedes, Aston Martin, you know, Alpine. Alfa Romeo was also very fast at one point during the test. So it is, you know, it's brutal. It's fantastic to see that how compact the grid is. Hopefully I'm wrong, and Red Bull is not that much ahead of the rest, and we have a fantastic season in front. But it looks very, very competitive from the second team to the last team. And even Williams looked much, much more competitive than last year. So I think we're looking for a very interesting season, where some teams will adapt at some type of circuits better than others, and we will see different things. It will not be a monopoly, you know, of the top three teams.
You mentioned Alfa Romeo there. Zhou Guan Yu was fastest on day two of the test. Andreas Seidel has hopped over from McLaren to be their CEO. Do you like what you're seeing at Alfa Romeo?
Well, it's a team I know a bit, because I was there at Sauber. I know the people. They're still the core of the team is very much the same as in the past 10 years. So it's a big asset to count with talent, known talent, and that remain in the team. And I think Andreas Seidel will be a fantastic team principal there. He has the same mentality. He knows the people. He has the experience at McLaren of being a Formula One team principal. So I think they will be a team that will definitely get stronger and stronger.
And Bottas's haircut very quickly. You like the mullet? We need to get Damon to get a mullet, really.
We need to speak with Bottas. I mean, it's not only the haircut, but also the moustache and stuff. You know, we need to make sure that he looks a bit more aerodynamic.
Do you know what, Pedro? I feel Valtteri has really come into his own at that team. The guy I see now is so different to the man who was at Mercedes alongside Lewis Hamilton. He's so relaxed. He's funny. The look, the moustache, the mullet. He has that sort of star quality, that leadership that I think that team needs. And we know he's fast over one lap. The car looked, I thought, decent over one lap, just as you say. So if they can keep the momentum going, last year they started strong and then slightly petered out in the second half of the year. If they can keep some momentum going, I could see them being, you know, well, they were P6 in the constructors last year, at least that again this year.
Yeah, I agree with you about Bottas and Valtteri. You know, I think that as a racing driver, once you are in such an unlucky position of having a teammate like Lewis Hamilton or Fernando or, you know, of Max Verstappen. You need to be very realistic with yourself. And if you're not capable of beating your teammate because they are more talented or, you know, I mean, full stop, you need to understand that, okay, I cannot keep saying that I want to beat them. I am as good as them, you know, because you end up in a psychological depression. You need to be realistic, realize that guy is faster, and make sure that on a bad day of the other guy, you will beat them. But it's not a drama if you finish second. And eventually, if you have a good season, you might end up beating the other guy, you know, but not because you are more talented. It's just because you are at the peak level of your given level. And this is something that I think Bottas has learned. The problem is that he's not at Mercedes anymore with Luis as a teammate, you know, but I think we've seen this grown up Bottas. And when you arrive to this state of mind, you are a much more relaxed individual. You are happy with your life and you perform at a higher level.
So if he got plugged into Mercedes again, do you think he'd perform better?
Absolutely. As long as he has understood this process, you know, if he goes back into a top team or, you know, with Luis again, with Mercedes, and he starts thinking, I can beat him now because I had 2 extra years at Alfa Romeo, then forget it. We will go to the stage one of the situation. You know, I'm sure. I mean, I'm saying this very easy to say this. You know, I mean, the difficulty really is when you're in war, when you are in front of one of these monsters, teammates, be able or have the clarity to understand what your role is and how to extract the maximum from your talent. This is the difficulty because it is very easy for, you know, for us to say, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to beat him in the next race. I know what mistakes I made, but if I don't make these mistakes ever again, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then you end up in this auto depression, you know, you depress yourself even further and you get to a point where you are actually a shadow of what you could be.
There's a few teams we haven't talked about, Pedro: AlphaTauri, Williams, Haas. So at Haas, the Hulk is back. Nico Hülkenberg returns at Haas for his first full season since 2019, 3 years out. Michael Schmidt thinks choosing Hülkenberg to replace Mick Schumacher was the right call.
Yes, I understand, because for Haas, obviously, it's very important to finish the season high up in the midfield, because every position means more money. I think they paid a little bit the price for lacking of experience in the cockpit. Last year they had only Magnussen with experience. Mick Schumacher was in his second year, but obviously you never have the same experience like somebody like Nico, who had done, I don't know how many, 10 seasons already. So for them, I think it was a pragmatic decision. Nothing personal against Mick Schumacher, more with the background that they wanted to have experience in the cockpit to have better results.
How long will it take Hülkenberg to get up to speed after effectively 3 years out?
I think not so long, because he proved in the few races he did in between, because he was replacing people who were sick or mainly sick. He proved that he accustomed to the cars quite quickly, and he was in all these 5 races up to the pace of the teammate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Nico is a fantastic, super quick driver, and it will all only depend on how motivated he is and how much he wants to step up, you know, into the racing role again. I mean, we will see. He's super talented. He's one of those guys that it's shocking that he has never been in the, you know, has never managed to be in the podium in Formula One. But it will very much depend how motivated he is, you know. He's been in all sort of teams. I think he will be very motivated, but he will have also a extremely strong benchmark in Kevin, because Kevin is giving it all, you know, and he's at the peak of his level. So let's see. It's on his hands, but he will have to work hard.
That's a really interesting battle, isn't it? Hülkenberg versus Magnussen. Who do you think is going to come out on top?
I think they will be very, very, very evenly matched. You know, there will be one race where Kevin is in front and Nico. I think that they are both very experienced, very good, very fast, very strong, very good in the wet as well. They are two drivers. Kevin is a bit more aggressive on the first laps, maybe a bit too much sometimes. Nico is more of a long-term player. He knows how to control himself in the first few laps of the race. We'll see. I think there will be. It's a really interesting pair of drivers, you know, and I think it's up to Gunther to make them work properly as a team. It's interesting as well, Tom, the fact that we have Haas, that they went with Mick Schumacher, Mazepin at one point, and then they've decided to go only for experience. So they don't want to go back into the taking any chance, which is a shame, really, because as a team where you Haas, you know, that they have to promote talent not only on the but engineering side, the mechanics, but I think they should also take some risks on the driver lineup, you know, and go for some new talent. But that's only my personal opinion, obviously.
And as for AlphaTauri and Williams, obviously Nyck de Vries is coming in alongside Yuki Tsunoda at AlphaTauri. I thought the car didn't look great in pre-season testing, but we're going to find out more when we go racing. And Williams, as you said earlier, looked like they've made a step forward from last year. But let's get the thoughts of F1's Lawrence Barreto.
So I spent some time with their old boss, Jos Capito, over the winter, and he is convinced that they've got a good car. Like, because the car that he left effectively is the car that Williams have got now. No one would have had the chance to change. And he feels that a lot of the work that they put in should put them in the mix to be in the midfield pack. Not at the front of the midfield pack, just in the mix of the pack. And I think so. What will represent a good year is I think we're going to see Alex in the early phase going for Q3s. I think we're going to, on certain tracks, I think we're going to see him pushing for points, because Alex brings that extra couple of tenths of a second to that car and he'll really be able to hustle it. And he's talked about the balance being so good. And if you can start a weekend with a good balanced car, you can really make progress quite quickly. And I think Logan will feed off all of that. What will represent a good season for him? Just trying to keep up with Alex, I think, and not making sure that gap isn't too big. I think he's going to struggle in that early phase to get out of Q1, because I think it's the reality of getting used to a race weekend and how it works and building up to qualifying. And we've seen how, you know, the likes of Yuki has really struggled to kind of just get that rhythm through the weekend. So it's going to be tough. But I do think Williams are probably still going to finish last in the Constructors' Championship. It will just be much closer and they'll have a few more highs, say, this season where they score points.
Another F2 graduate on the grid this year, Logan Sargeant. He was fourth last year. Give us your thoughts on him.
I think if you base it on the Silverstone weekend that he had last year in F2, it was a phenomenal weekend for him. You talk to anyone involved in his team then, anyone at Williams who watched what happened that weekend, and they were saying, you know, this guy is the star of the future. But it just wasn't consistent enough last year. They obviously had... Williams already had Logan in the family, in the driver academy, and so they've got to learn to know him. And over the last year or so, he's really come out of his shell, but he's still really, really quite quiet. And that has an impact on the feedback that he gives to the team, the confidence he has to really say what he feels the team should do. So I think it's going to take him some time to kind of bed into that team. I think the benefits are that Alex gets on really well with him, has been very open in trying to help him settle in. I like what he did in testing so far. I think he got a lot of laps. He's got his head down. The team just say, give him a program. He does the program. I think these are really basic things that often racing drivers aren't so good at. So I think it starts well, but it's going to be a tough year. Alex is driving personally at the peak of his performance. And I think to beat him in a team where he's so settled is going to be challenging. But I do think that Logan, if he can kind of get a good start to the season, could have a good year.
My question to you about Williams, Pedro, is actually regarding James Vowles. He's their new team principal. In the press conference at the test, he was very impressive. I thought spoke very well. So what kind of a job do you think Vowles will do for Williams? And how much of a loss is he for Mercedes?
It's a difficult question, Tom, because I've never worked with James. So I've, you know, all I can say is that everyone that has worked with him professionally and also common friends we have, they speak very highly about him, you know, not only as a professional, but as a person, as a human being. So he will be a loss for Mercedes, first point. I mean, for sure, because he, you know, Mercedes always has had this core group of people that they were top engineers, fantastic, you know, strength giving to the, you know, but also they were going on holiday together. So I think it's very important when you have this type of relationship as well. You know, you respect the guys professionally, but you also enjoy your time with them, when you travel, when you go to the races, or even when you go on holiday with the family. So I think that he will be deeply missed in the team, and he will be a fantastic team principal. I mean, that is for sure, because the only downside he might have is that he cannot follow the approach he's had at Mercedes in a team like Williams. You know, basically he has to be a lot more pragmatical, because obviously what he's inheriting is not a perfect machine that you only have to put a bit of oil in the gearbox. You know, I mean, he will have to make structural changes and make sure that he knows how to spend the limited budget in every department, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure that a guy like him will manage to do that, because at the end of the day, he was a strategist, you know?
Yes. What is his strategy with Williams? Yeah. Well, I asked him what job number one would be for him, and he said it's getting a technical director in. That's what we need, he said. I don't know where you look, whether you go for experience, whether he can lean on someone he's worked with before, or whether you try and pluck someone young and exciting. That's his first challenge. And if you go for someone who's experienced, then it's, well, how long is the gardening leave? When are you going to be able to start at the team? So I think it's going to be a while before we see Williams making true progress up the order. They'll be closer this year, but I think they need all those, everything like a technical director in place before they can make real progress. Pedro, it's been fantastic to have you on the show. It really is. Like we asked Damon and Nat, go on, give us your final prediction of how you think it's going to end up this year.
You mean final of the championship?
Yeah, when we're in Abu Dhabi, who's going to be lifting the trophy, or will they have already lifted it by then?
Okay, I mean, and the winner is Max Verstappen.
It's hard to see it going anywhere else. And, you know, I wondered whether after winning back-to-back titles, whether he might just, I don't know, have lost that je ne sais quoi, that hunger in any way. And I saw nothing of that at the test. I thought he looked leaner and meaner than I've ever seen him, actually.
Yes, you're right, Tom. And you know what really impressed me about Max is that his first few laps with the new car were impressive. He went out and immediately was lapping like if he had been born in that car, you know. How easy it made it look. And when you look at his onboard cameras, he's just not fighting with the car at all. He's just flowing. It looks easy, you know. And so I think that he's at a fantastic level. The team is giving him exactly what he needs. And he will be a tough competitor. Difficult not to bet for him.
Ah, well, I'm going to agree with you and say Max is going to lift the trophy, but I think Mission 33 is going to be a success. And I do think that Fernando Alonso will win a race this year. It won't be a straightforward race. It'll be one where there's some wet, or the leaders crash for some reason, but I think he can do it. And I think it would be such a good news story for Formula One when it happens.
I hope you're right, but in any, you know, with Fernando, we say, look, we are at the stage we are in now in our lives. No matter what, we will have fun. And believe me that we are having a lot of fun in Aston Martin so far. The atmosphere in the team is fantastic. And it is up to us, really, that make sure that this atmosphere remains the same, even if the results are not as good as we are expecting. You know, I think that it's a dynamic process. It is extremely fragile. When you know the atmosphere in a team can swing either way. Fernando is convinced, and I am also, you know, trying to do my best in making sure that this atmosphere remains the same.
Now, before we go, here are a few notices. First up, Ask the Nation. Okay, this is F1 Nation. We really, really want you to be involved this year. Any questions or queries you have, please ask us. And in the past, we've put Damon on the spot. He's answered your questions in Ask Damon. But this year, myself, Pedro, and the rest of the team want to get involved too. So we're going to do Ask the Nation. You can get your F1 questions answered by the whole team, including Damon, of course. So get them ready, record them as a voice note, and send them to f1nation@f1.com. That email address again, f1nation@f1.com. We're also going to be playing F1 Fantasy this year. We're setting up an F1 Nation team that we're going to manage. we'll spend our virtual $100 million budget on two constructors and five drivers that we think are going to score the most points. If you want to join us, and please do, we're going to have a lot of fun. It's free to play. Just search online for F1 Fantasy to sign up. Then choose your car and drivers ahead of the first race, and we'll give you details of our F1 Nation League next week. And F1 Beyond the Grid Season 6 starts this week on Wednesday, the 1st of March. Please keep an eye on the Beyond the Grid podcast feed for our trailer and first episode. You're going to have to wait to find out who that first interviewee is, but I promise you it's a good one. But for now, from all of us here at F1 Nation, thanks for listening. We'll be back next Monday to review the first race of 2023. Pedro, thanks so much, and I'll see you in Saudi Arabia.
See you then, and maybe we can do the F1 Nation there with Fast Damon.
Fast Damon. There we go. You've coined a new one. Brilliant, Pedro. Look, take care. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.